point, if you play well, you'll move up the ladders. And I fully agree with that. But there's a caveat. It's a meritocracy, yes, but I don't care how talented you are, what your work ethic is like, what your pedigree is. If you can't afford to travel to a tournament, if you can't afford routine course access or the kind of coaching you need at that level, it doesn't matter how talented you are. You're not going to realize the fullness of your potential.
Welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, the podcast which invites guests from all corners of the golf, health, and well-being industry to share inspiring stories and practical insights on how we can be at our best mentally, physically, and socially, both on and off the golf course. I'm Chris Lynch, your host and the founder of GYH, where it is our mission to help you live happier, healthier, and more fulfilled lives through the power of golf. If that sounds like a movement and a community that you would like to be a part of, then head to golfyourselfhealthy.com and subscribe now. This week's guest, Donny Dotson, is a man who makes golfers' dreams come true. How does he do that, I hear you ask? Well, let's think of it this way. Whenever we watch professional golf on TV and see our idols or role models there in front of us, lifting prestigious trophies or winning big paychecks, we'd be forgiven for thinking these golfers have an easy life, paying no attention to the journey they went on to get to the top in the first place. The reality is, very few make it to the top, and those who do will often have had to make significant financial sacrifices to get there. However, thanks to Donny's entrepreneurial spirit and innovation, he's created and founded Carry in 2021, a unique platform which allows fans like you and I, as well as corporate sponsors and investors, to help promising up-and-coming golfers turn their dreams into reality by funding their career pathway to the pro tours. As I put it to Donny in our conversation, for all that we talk about mental, physical, and social health, there is such a thing as financial health too. So with the funding platform he's created, it would seem that he's helping to reduce the mental load and relieve some stress and anxiety for these athletes, freeing them up to perform out in the course without the worry of how they're going to pay for entry fees, travel, and the assortment of other expenses which go along with being an aspiring tour pro. He achieves this, meanwhile, giving something back to us fans and investors in the process. With the more recent launch of Carry's Talent Marketplace, golf fans have a unique opportunity to get access to some of the pros in ways which we otherwise wouldn't normally get. For example, have you ever wanted to caddy for a professional golfer? Or maybe you want a pro to help you with your own game? Work on goal setting, work on your swing, or help you overcome imposter syndrome on the course? These are just a few of the unique experiences offered via the Carry Talent Marketplace, which I encourage you to check out in the link in the show notes to see the roster of players which Donny and Carry have on their books, with widespread representation across both the major American and European tours, and certainly a few names on there that you might recognise. As ever, this is a far-reaching conversation which touches on various aspects of golf, health and well-being, and one which is sure to enlighten you. Without any further ado, let's tee off and jump into the conversation. Donny, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast. It's really great to have you. Donny, I'm going to tee off, and the question for you is for you to tell us about your first memory of playing golf. Who were you with? Where were you?
When I was 7-ish, my uncle took me to the then Honda Classic. It was held at Eagle Trace in South Florida. Took me to the Honda Classic for the day, and it was my first time at a golf tournament. And, managed to do all the things that kids do, right? Signed hats and stuff like that and signatures from pros. And one of the things I got that I definitely didn't appreciate was an autographed ball from Payne Stewart. And what was really cool about Payne, I mean, this just speaks to the kind of man he was. You know, more often than not, people sign a ball and it's kind of a quick thing because they're signing for so many. He literally took the time to write it out in print, Payne Stewart, and I think he wrote like the year of the Honda Classic on it, but it was really cool. And so I had this ball that I didn't really appreciate the value. Took it back to our house, and I had a set of like cut down persimmons woods from my great grandfather. And I think I very quickly took a four wood and hooked it left into the pond, and I had that ball for maybe 12 hours tops. and I look back now and it's like, no, I really wish I would have dove into the pond and got that ball. But I remember that. And, you know, the Honda Classic itself was certainly a driver for me getting, you know, or starting to fall in love with golf.
Did you appreciate who he was at the age of 7? Like, I'm just wondering, like, if you really had a sense of, if that was almost like one of your first interactions with golf, you maybe wouldn't have known who was who, right? And
I didn't appreciate who he was, other than, you know, my great grandparents were huge into golf, you know, played it up until, you know, the day they passed. And they were, you know, constantly watching on TV. So whenever I went over their house, you know, the names that I knew growing up were Ray Floyd, Curtis Strange, Chichi Rodriguez. And so I think they probably helped give me some foundation that, you know, this is kind of cool, but I certainly, certainly didn't appreciate it for what it was, but it was, it's a memory for sure.
Most definitely. Yeah. That's a really cool one. But like you say, maybe the exuberance of youth, let's call it, just in terms of just like, it's just like any old golf ball, right? So,
well, there's that. And then there's the reality that I can't hit a persimmons wood today. I definitely couldn't hit one when I was 7. So I was set up for failure, you know, but,
I'm with you on that for sure. So I couldn't either. Donnie, let's get to know you. I'd like my listener to get the chance to know a bit about you. So if you want to give us a little bit of a whistle-stop tour of who you are and your background and your journey and leading us up to you having created Carrie.
So I grew up in South Florida, as I mentioned, and, you know, golf is everywhere. It wasn't something I played a ton. You know, it's obviously an expensive sport. My parents didn't really have a lot of money to make that happen. But my interest, at least competitively, lied in American football, baseball, soccer growing up. But I always loved the game. And as I grew older, only, you know, grew to love it more. Professionally, my career started in the national defense or national security arena. I was a Marine straight out of high school. I tell everyone in part because I was 17 when I graduated high school and going on 13, and I needed a little bit of maturation. So enlisted in the Marines, got out just after we returned from the invasion of Iraq in 2003. I realized we were going to be in the Middle East for some time to come, and it was the first time I had traveled anywhere with the Marine Corps that I felt just culturally unaware, right? Just completely oblivious to the way of life in the Middle East and kind of broader Arab world. So I went to school, studied Arabic primarily, went back to work for the government as a civilian intelligence officer, and spent a lot of time, at least most of my late 20s and early 30s, back in the Middle East in that capacity. And then I got married, priorities shifted, ultimately went to business school at Duke, came out working in finance at Goldman Sachs, and that was a great experience as well. Got to work with some wonderful people and certainly learn a lot about the private sector. And then just before COVID shut down sports and life in a lot of ways, I left Goldman to work at a company called Sport Radar, which is, you know, now publicly traded. And their whole business is collecting sports data and then distributing it to media partners, but also sports betting operators. And it was while I was working at Sport Radar, in large part due to COVID, that I became just acutely aware of how much talent is out there within professional golf, you know, striving to reach the top tours and really how expensive that journey is and some of the potential pitfalls along the way if you don't have the right resources. And so in April of 21, I left Sport Radar and went all in on, you know, creating this business, Carrie, which was originally meant to be a platform where fans could invest in the careers of up-and-coming pros and do so largely from a standpoint of access, experience, and kind of paying it forward to potential stars of tomorrow. And, you know, our model has evolved a little bit since then, but it's been a very rewarding 4 years, while simultaneously the hardest thing I've ever done professionally.
Maybe we'll talk a bit about that in the course of the conversation, you know, because my brand is really built around, I believe that to be resilient is to be healthy.
To be resilient is to be healthy. I do. I would say I tend to think of resilience as a great personal strength, and right, and something we could all use more of, because I don't care what your personal story is, what your background is, whether you were born with a silver spoon or quite the opposite. Everyone's going to have challenges throughout life. Usually, you know, in any given month or year, you're going to face some real challenges. And if you lack resilience, your ability to persevere through those things and certainly be your best self through those things, you know, can be a real limiting factor. So, yeah, I like the idea of resilience as an indicator of health.
Yeah, it's an enabler, I think. Yeah. Anyway, you know, it's not a silver bullet, right? You know, it's one facet. Talking more about Carry and what you do with Carry and how you support the athletes that you work with, I had this thought, and I remember I was going to share the story with you and the listener coming into this conversation today. So you're obviously familiar with the UK. Donna, you've got some athletes I know that sort of play over here, you know, sure. DP World Tour and such. I live in Wales, one of the four home nations of the UK, and I was playing golf recently with a friend, and I would kind of consider him a colleague in a fairly loose way at Wales Golf, so the national governing body. And I was saying to him, I said, look, well, Northern Ireland, you've got a very obvious Mr. McIlroy that you know is takes care of their poster child, amazing golfer that's made it. Scotland now, I mean, my guy Robert McIntyre, he's going really well now. You know, we've got some great talent coming out of Scotland, and then England as well is relatively speaking in the UK got plenty to offer in terms of you know, and that's just the men's game I'm talking about there, right? Just to quote a few examples. But Wales has not had any stellar talent really to speak of in recent years. You'd probably have to go back to Phil Price, who played in the Ryder Cup and famously beat Phil Mickelson. He apparently tells that story all the time and after dinner. That's his one-liner kind of thing. Tell them who I beat.
I mean, wouldn't you?
Of course. Right? Of course I would. It's a great claim to fame, isn't it? Right. But my point is there's been a bit of a sort of a scarcity of it's kind of dried up a little bit in Wales. And I said to this guy, I said, look, who's your money on in terms of who's going to be the next player coming out of Wales to make it on the tour? And he quoted one guy, a guy called James Ashfield, actually, who he played in the Walker Cup against the US and the GB and Ireland team a couple of years ago. And he is widely regarded in Wales as being the guy who is front of the queue, basically. Mm. But Theo, my friend, said to me, he said, the crucial thing for James is he's got the financial backing. And I stopped for a second and I was like, well, what do you mean? I thought if you had the talent, you'll make it.
Sure.
And it made me pause to realize that in this day and age, talent isn't necessarily everything. It's going to carry you a long way, but there's obviously a financial reality to it as well. So can you help the listener understand what these athletes are really up against when it comes to chasing their dreams?
It's one of the more expensive, you know, sports you can play. And, you know, at this point I've spoken with, you know, well over 1500 tour pros from seemingly ever tour on the planet, or if they're not currently playing, certainly former. And the story is the same, you know, time and time again. Hey, Donnie, I've been playing golf my entire life. I'm really good. You can see my resume where I won at every level, all the accolades to boot. And then I turn pro, and it's a really expensive journey. And oftentimes, you know, mom and dad or the family has leveraged all their financial means just to get, you know, son or daughter or their, you know, their offspring, you know, to that point. And so if you're a pro, you essentially become your own business. You are your own business. And like many businesses, one of your first priorities is to go out and raise capital. And I don't know about you, but if I was 22, 23 and someone said, you know, go raise $100,000 or 100,000 pounds for your career, for anything, I certainly wouldn't have had the network, the know-how, the confidence to go do that. And even if you do, I mean, raising money is a bit of a full-time job. And so that distracts from the task at hand. What I always like to say is that the oldest cliche within pro golf is that golf is a meritocracy. You know, to your point, if you play well, you'll move up the ladders. And I fully agree with that. But there's a caveat. It's a meritocracy, yes, but I don't care how talented you are, what your work ethic is like, what your pedigree is. If you can't afford to travel to a tournament, if you can't afford routine course access or the kind of coaching you need at that level, it doesn't matter how talented you are. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to realize the fullness of your potential. And so that's a big part of the reality. I mean, we think about sports here in the U.S. where we can see a very clear path when someone's a, you know, a college player, a university player, they have success at that level. And then there's a draft. And next thing you know, they're playing professional with a guaranteed contract and compensation package. Whereas in golf and some other sports, there is no guarantees, right? And again, you have to go out and earn. And our whole mission has been, how can you help the athletes extend their runway so they can go from chasing their dreams to living their dreams? And we've seen, you know, quite a few players live that reality out, and others who haven't quite made it to their, you know, their goals. That's going to be the reality always. But it's definitely a financial challenge, and most people, if not everyone within pro golf, would readily recognize that.
Talk to us more about your business model. Help, you know, tell us more about what do my listeners need to know about Carry and how it works?
Sure. So again, originally we started with this model where fans could invest in players and do so, access experience, overall opportunity. And then, yeah, if the players played well in certain top tour events, they would share a small percentage of their earnings. And, you know, my original vision was, hopefully we would see enough success that it would create a bit of a flywheel, right? Players have success, they pay back into the fund or the LLC. And then those same investors say, this is really cool. It's obviously working. We're getting to consume more golf and on occasion get to play golf with them or kind of learn their stories. Let's do it for the next group. And, then we, you know, certainly a very productive model. We've helped a lot of athletes that way. And I know a lot of the fan investors that participated in our offering, our crowdfunding campaign back in 2023 would say, hey, this has been so cool. Again, like I've had some access I otherwise wouldn't have. I get to consume more golf. But we spent a lot of money on legal and compliance, trying to make sure we were doing that perfectly by the athletes, by the investors. And along the way, we also had a lot of people tell us, like, hey, I didn't put in $250 or $500 or whatever it was necessarily because I want to turn that into $2,500 or $5,000. Rather, I just thought this would be a fun way to do something with some discretionary income. And I really value the access more, right? If there's events, if there's a way to connect with players on a more personal level, that's more meaningful to me. We also had, during that crowdfunding campaign I met referenced in 2023, we also had some companies reach out or business owners reach out and say, this is really cool. I'm going to throw some personal cash in to help these players. Oh, by the way, I have, you know, a business. How can I get my logo on all 10 players? And obviously for those kind of branding deals, you got to include their representation, their managers for those players who have them. And we just thought maybe there's a more efficient way. And so in 2025, I'll fast forward a bit. And earlier this year, we launched a new sponsorship marketplace where fans and brands can go and they can support athletes in a few different ways, right? If you're a company, you can explore different brand ambassador opportunities and, you know, put your logo on a player or do some kind of social campaign with them. If you're an individual and you want to support players, you can do so either by donating, you know, similar to GoFundMe, or you can buy, you know, any one of the many unique experiences that are currently on our marketplace. It could be a private round with a golfer, you know, private pro-am. It could be caddy in a tournament round or practice round. It could be lessons. I mean, any sort of traditionally can't buy golf experience is available there. And for those transactions, the donations and the experiential purchases, we take 10%. When we sell individual athlete sponsorships, it's generally 15%. And then one part of our model, which I'm quite fond of, although it takes a bit longer in the sales process, is we've gone to big corporations and we've pitched them on a collective sponsorship or bundling athletes. And we say, hey, you know, insert Fortune 500 company here. We know you're not traditionally in the business of sponsoring up and comers, but now you can sponsor up to 50 in one transaction or certainly a subset thereof. And, you know, we reduce the friction. We handle all the reporting and help with the content production. And all this comes at a significant fraction of a price to what it would cost to get your logo on a PGA Tour player, for example. So for those collective sponsorships, we take 20%. So 10% from the marketplace, 15% for individual athlete sponsorships, and then 20% for these collective or bundle. You can think of them as group licensing deals.
Yeah. The one in particular of those options that you give that really made me curious when I was doing my research in Cary was that marketplace, that kind of unique experiences. You know, because if I go through your roster and click on all the sort of player cards, there's, you know, there are some where, like you say, that quite a number of them will offer play around with me or I can coach you or whatever. But there are a few that are some really unique kind of leveraging the unique skills and talents of that golfer. So I just wondered, what are some of the most unique ones that are offered and how have they been received by people? Are you finding that actually people are actually more inclined to invest if they feel like they're getting something back like that? Or are people quite happy to part company with cash just because they want to support that person and don't necessarily expect anything in return?
Yeah, most of the transactions since we launched have been donations. And I think part of that is just, it's easy, right? It's, hey, I can throw in $50, $100, $200 and know I'm helping and feel more tethered to someone's journey. But we are seeing transactions for the experiential purchases. I will say there's a little bit of, you know, UX and feature improvement that we're going to look to add to make the logistics of sorting out those experiences easier, right? If you purchase a round with a player right now, we have kind of a concierge program in the background that helps facilitate those transactions, but we want to make it even easier and more intuitive to the purchasers. In terms of unique, I mentioned the caddy thing, and if you would have told me 5 years ago that people would pay to caddy for someone, you know, usually it's the other way around, I would have said I don't get it. But yeah. part of the reason we went towards this model was over the last few years, I mean, the amount of times people reached out saying, hey, when can I caddy for a player or otherwise kind of be inside the ropes? It was eye-opening. And so that's one that comes up often. There's some really cool destinations and private clubs mentioned in our current experiential offerings that, you know, you could think of them as a neat way to get on a club you might otherwise not have access to while also getting to play with a pro. Yeah, there's a handful that I see and I'm like, wow, I want to spend my money on that right now.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, I'm looking at Nick Brancina at the moment, and he has this one which is a speaking engagement, attacking long-term goals and imposter syndrome. Like, that jumped off at me. Yeah. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool, you know? Yeah, no, it's just nice. It's nice to see the array and the variety there. So very cool.
The other thing regarding speaking engagements, you'll see a lot of the pros have some sort of mentorship or consulting or, you know, hear it from me first type offering geared towards, you know, juniors, up and coming juniors within golf and their parents. Some of it is about, you know, how to present yourself best to navigate the college recruiting process. Some of it is, you know, tournaments you should be playing, tours you should be playing. A lot of it is more just, hey, hear it from me as a pro. Sometimes you're going to have good days in golf. Sometimes you're going to have bad. We've all been there. And I think more in the spirit of encouragement. And it speaks to what our players maybe feel like they didn't have or wish they had more of when they were in, you know, those junior shoes. So I think those kinds of things are really novel. And obviously as a parent of, you know, kids myself, certainly if there's a way to help get them a unique experience or help them, you know, in sports or life, you're going to be more inclined to want to do those things. So it's a neat angle.
When I think of health, and when you kind of look at the definition of health by, say, the World Health Organization, is typically looked at through through the pillars of mental, physical, and social health. But financial health is increasingly coming into focus. And I almost wondered if you consciously or otherwise see how, do you somehow view it that with Carry it's helping the financial health almost of your athletes? Because you were saying earlier that, you know, by virtue of what you do, you're almost, I'd like to think you're kind of stripping away some anxiety for them in a sense, inadvertently helping them. I don't know. Maybe that's a stretch, but I'd love your perspective on it.
I mean, that's certainly part of the intent. I don't know if I've necessarily thought about it in the exact phrasing of financial health, but I mean, when you talk to athletes and you interview them about the importance of having the right resources, and it's the same as, you know, a business owner or startup founder, right? If you don't have the right resources, it really limits your ability to compete. When you talk with players, the amount of times I hear things like, it's amazing what a little bit of cash in the bank will do for, you know, for the amount of birdies you make in a given round, or mindset, right? One of the early kind of, you know, points of awareness for me in the discovery process for should I go ahead and pursue this venture was I would talk to players that had taken on some kind of private backing, you know, and there's some wonderful, generous, perfectly good-willed backing out there, you know, from club members or financiers, whoever it might be, family members. And then there's also a world of what I would consider predatory, where players are agreeing to these private credit deals or private loans that are really not in their best interest. And when I would talk with players early on, what I would hear often is, hey, I've got this funding from, you know, from so-and-so or this entity, and I'm required to pay back, you know, X percentage of earnings, you know, every month. And I've got this meaningful nut to overcome. And so I'm playing in lower level events. And rather than going out trying to win, it's almost like I'm taking this mindset of, what do I have to do to ensure I finish, you know, I make the cut and finish inside the money. So at least I have something to pay back. So they almost throttle back, you know, in places where they should play aggressive or maybe, play more aggressive. They almost throttle back and they play it safe. And I don't know how much lower level tour golf you consume, but particularly here in the US, if you're playing on developmental tours, lower levels, you know, more often than not, that winning score is going to be pretty deep, and you've got to be willing to, you know, go at pins and score. And so if you're playing just to make a cut or just to finish in the money, yeah, that may satisfy your immediate need of paying back your backer, but it's not necessarily helping you get to the top. And so when I think about financial health, it definitely, especially with our earlier athletes who we had a more direct balance sheet sponsorship model, it does provide a bit of freedom to go out there and they know win, lose, or draw, I got money in the bank. So if you have a bad week and you miss a cut, which is going to happen to everyone, no big deal. Conversely, if you're playing week in, week out, knowing that the next tournament or the next trip isn't promised because you don't have the funding, that's absolutely going to impact your game. And I think, you know, I tend to think of health and wellness as it all overlaps, right? Mm-hmm. You can, whether it's spiritual, financial, emotional, physical, mental, if there's a depletion in one, it's going to have some spillover to the other aspects. And so I do think the financial freedom to go out and play your best is very important. And, you know, our goal with that marketplace is let's give more athletes that freedom to do so.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that the athletes that you work with, that they're elite, or they're most certainly aspiring to be elite, right? What do you see generally in terms of health and well-being, and what's the good stuff that's happening, and what's the stuff that you think more could be done?
Well, I would say as a whole, you know, it's been encouraging to see society here in the U.S. Take a better appreciation for health and wellness being much more than just, you know, how fast can you run a mile and how much weight can you lift, right? I think we've traditionally associated health with purely physical. And it's been really neat to see that, you know, society has opened up to mental health being a core component of someone's overall well-being. And certainly in talking, getting to know our players who are, you know, often 20 years younger than myself, they're much more open about their approach to mental health, maybe struggles they've had, how they deal with it on the course and off. And that's, I think that's a good indicator of, you know, a bit of progression here. There are infinitely more resources available online. There are so many people out there that are performance coaches, mindset coaches. And I think that also helps, you know, certainly from a golf angle or a sport angle. But then I also think, you know, you're seeing leadership from people who have made it, right, in their sport, speaking out about mental health. You know, I just had a conversation again last week with Steve Wheatcroft, former PGA Tour player, who, you know, a little more than a year ago published a letter to kind of share, hey, you know, here's a story you didn't know necessarily, or kind of my struggle behind what you might have seen in tournament play or on TV. And he's got a really neat foundation, the Mulligan Foundation, which is how can we take athletes who have made it and speak to up and coming players or athletes in any sport, at any level, about prioritizing mental health, right? He actually just put out a post yesterday, which I had never thought of this way, but it's a very classic cliche here in the US. I'm sure it is in the UK and abroad as well. But, you know, you often hear growing up when you're playing sports, are you hurt or are you injured, right? If you get banged up, let's say it's football and you get banged up on a play, are you hurt or are you injured? If you're hurt, that means you can probably rub some dirt on it or stretch it out or just kind of, you know, muscle through it. If you're injured, it means like you can't play right now. You need to get healed first. And Steve posted on LinkedIn, I believe yesterday even, how the same thing applies for mental health, right? You know, at any given time, we all might be hurt mentally. And I think some of the examples he cited were people going through a divorce or financial struggles or stresses at work. You know, we all have those things and they're tough. And, you know, that kind of speaks to resilience that we were talking about earlier. We all go through them, but you can play through those things. You can endure those things independently. But if you're injured, if you've got, you know, an issue with your brain or you're otherwise, you've lost control of your mental health, you know, then you really do need to speak, you know, you need to find the right resources and expertise to focus on that. And I'm encouraged. You were talking about before we get on this recording here, you're talking about, you know, different workplace benefits, whether it's maternity or paternity leave for people. I think we are seeing a little bit more embracing of corporations, you know, championing mental health benefits and their packages. In the same way, if you're sick, don't come to the office, you know, physically sick. If you're mentally sick, like, you know, take the rest and get the help you need.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I've kind of got two questions. One, which is looking at healthy habits versus unhealthy habits. Is there anything that you do? Have you got any healthy habits that you adopt that you would say are a must or have kind of transformed your way of living that you've implemented in your way of life that really help you day to day?
Yeah. I mean, I think we could probably have a long conversation. I would love to ask you the same about this topic. I'm not one of those people that has to do, you know, these 15 things in a certain order every morning. I know there's a lot of that out there. That's not me. There's things I like to do and prioritize, but if there's a little variance in the routine, that's okay. You know, physically, I'm very big into to exercise, right? I think the Marine Corps was a good foundation for me. And at different times in my life, it's been less of a priority than others. But over the last, you know, half dozen years or so, it's been hugely helpful for me to, you know, to navigate life's challenges and start the day off in a good way. So I try to get in a good workout every morning. The past year plus, I haven't had a sip of alcohol, and I found that that's been really helpful for me, right? Not, you know, from a standpoint of waking up every day fresh and clear-eyed. Those things have been good. Obviously, time with family and friends, I think, is always renewing. And then, you know, for me, there's also two other things that are paramount. One, I've been working with a therapist for a handful of years now, 6 years now. And at different times she's been a life coach, at different times she's just been a sounding board, and having a place where I can better understand myself and maybe leave each session a better version of myself and better to everyone around me. I think that's been wonderful. But the most important thing, you know, beyond even family, friend time, beyond everything else, is my personal faith. As a Christian, I lean heavily on that. Every morning, I read the Bible, spend some time in prayer, and I do it from a standpoint of finding some inner peace, but also reminding myself that you don't have to go life alone, that we don't go life alone, and that knowing that there's a God who loves us and cares for us has been very helpful to me.
Thank you for sharing all of that. Conversely, mm-hmm. Do you have any vices, any things that you're kind of working on at the moment when you think, do you know what, I could do with eradicating that from my life, or I could do with working on myself in that regard?
In late August to early December or January here in the States, that's our college football season. It's football season, but as someone who grew up in South Florida, I am a diehard University of Miami fan, and late August to January, they probably consume news about Miami, you know, the games, probably consumes more of my time than I'm proud of. I'm very aware, though, of vices. I'm a very competitive person, so I don't do things like fantasy sports. I've dabbled in them once or twice, and every time I do, that also takes up way too much time because I just want to win every week. And so I try to take an all or nothing approach. Moderation has never been a personal strength, and so if I just know it's not in my best interest or I'm not going to handle it in a healthy way, I just abstain. But definitely obsession with football. You know, I'm sure there are many other. I have a sweet tooth, and my approach to that is just try not to even look at it, right? I'm sure there are others too.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've said something there, I'm sure, about moderation, and you know, I think for me, having a business now, a brand that majors around health I don't know. I don't have the dietary nutritional habits that I think it would that I would like to have that would almost make me as credible as I perhaps think I could be or should be, you know, when it comes to espousing or sort of, you know, trying to advocate for health. But at the same time, you know, I know plenty of personal trainers or people like that who will say, hey, look, you know, I still have a chocolate bar every day in some cases. There was something crucial you said there as well, Donnie, I think about, I love the example of the fantasy sports betting, for instance, because I can relate to that one, you know, because, you know, I'm someone who, you know, God willing, I'll be 6 years sober from drinking on the 14th of July.
That's awesome.
And thank you. And, and I think through my sobriety, I learned fairly quickly that I don't tend to do things in half measures, right? So if I'm gonna go on DraftKings and play fantasy sports or whatever for this upcoming PGA Tour weekend or whatever, there's a pretty good chance that I'm not going to be mindful or present during that weekend. And when my wife and I go out on the Saturday or late on the Friday, I'm constantly on my phone seeing if my six guys have made the cut or not. Yep. That's not healthy behavior. You know, so I got to make a judgment call, I think, around, am I in a place at the moment where I can do that and have a bit of fun with it, but actually not, it's not touching a certain nerve, or it's triggering almost like an addictive trait in me, essentially, right? So, and that's a personal judgment call always. So with that example, I mean, do you... Sounds like you've dabbled in that before. Have you kind of removed that now completely? Or again, do you kind of make a judgment call at a point in time?
It's interesting. And what you just said, you know, reminds me of my reality with Carrie, right? I'm a fan, first and foremost, of all the athletes we work with, right? I just want to see people have success in life and golf. You know, I think a lot of my job sometimes is to be a bit of a cheerleader and remind our athletes just how talented they are. But because of our business, I am constantly looking at leaderboards of tournaments that many people may not even know exist. And, you know, in a given week, we may have 40 athletes or 35 athletes competing all around the world. And so I'm bouncing back and forth, want to see how they're doing. And so that probably scratches my fantasy itch alone. But I do need to be mindful of, hey, when I go home at night or when I'm with my family on the weekends, yes, that's when golf tournaments are going on. But, you know, my immediate priority and my focus needs to be on family first. And so sometimes I do struggle with that. And that's something where my wife gives me a lot of grace, but it's something I wrestle with for sure.
Now that we're talking about it, I think actually where I've maybe arrived at a healthier place with, say, fantasy sports, for example, is just having friendly leagues with friends that don't have monetary stakes on them, basically. Sure. Because what I find is that still satisfies my my competitive side, where I'm kind of like, you know, we're having a group chat about, oh, you know, I'm going to outscore you this weekend or whatever. But the second that money's on the line, that starts to introduce different dynamics, which sometimes aren't healthy, aren't particularly pleasant, you know. So the minute there's money on the line, changes the dynamic, right?
The money is part of it, but I laugh there because I'm also, even though I don't partake as much, you know, I stay away from it, I love reading about all the different fantasy punishments for whoever finishes in last place or maybe second to last in their league. I mean, I don't know if that's big in the UK, but here in the US, like, the punishments for finishing last are oftentimes hilarious, right? In golf, you can see stuff like, hey, whoever finishes last has to caddy for the winner, you know, on a given weekend. One of the ones that I've come to appreciate, and it there's kind of a double-edged sword here because of, you know, carry, but the punishments where if you finish last, you have to go do a Monday qualifier or you have to do a US Open qualifier. Now, I hate to think about it for the actual pro or players they get paired with, right? Because they're out there literally, you know, chasing after a dream and maybe their own livelihood. So on that side, it's like, I wish that didn't exist. But just the, you know, the human in me, the reality of go play in a US Open qualifier, you know, as a 11-12 index, struggling to break 100, probably not breaking 100, you know, in a course that's prep for a qualifier, with guys and gals who are literally going after their dream. I think about stuff like that, and it's it makes me laugh at the creativity of people.
Yeah. Is that actually possible that someone with an 11 index or something can go and realize that?
Well, you can fudge the system a little bit. I don't think it's exactly apologies USGA and you know state sections that host those qualifiers. I don't think it's exactly like breaking into a maximum security prison.
No, but equally,
or breaking out, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah, but the word that comes to mind is that's inhumane. That's borderline inhumane to do that to
people. Hilarious. And that's like a drop in the bucket. I mean, I met a guy a few years ago who his punishment was he had to get on a Greyhound bus from New York to like Oklahoma. He had to ride it. He had to ride it straight there and straight back. And during this time, like he had an obligation to drink so many numbers of beers and like, it was just wild, like to even think that someone would come up with this. But he's telling the story, and you know, I'm crying because it's so funny. But
there's a lot of them out there. Oh yeah, totally. But there's almost like a lot of testosterone involved in that story as well. Because it's like, oh right, okay. Well, last year we did this thing to that guy. Yes. Well, this year we're upping the stakes even more, kind of thing. You know, it's like, how far is this going to go before it gets completely out of hand? You know,
it becomes a bit of a Russian roulette in a way. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. Oh, crazy. Well, anyway, Donny, I think I need to let you go. I think we're coming up just to let you go on to your next call or whatever you need to do. But listen, Donny, thank you for the conversation. I've loved it. I've laughed and smiled, and I've pondered, and I think we've covered a lot of ground in this conversation.
If you want to check us out, it's app.carry.golf. Would love to hear from you. You know, feel free to shoot us a note. My email is donny@carry.golf. And you know, I'm grateful for you having me on, Chris. I gotta say, you know, what you do is awesome, and I know this is an additional responsibility for you as a family man and someone who works full time elsewhere. But what you do is awesome. We all need to find different instruments to make ourselves more healthy. And I would say that the spirit and kind of story that is as you know, led you to pour yourself into this is really cool, and it benefits all of us. So I've enjoyed the times we've had to chat both during this session and beyond. You know, just thank you for having this platform.
Thank you, Donny. I really, really genuinely appreciate that. That's really kind. And let's keep the conversation going. Maybe have you on some other time, or I'm sure there's so much more we can do together or speak about down the line. So thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like what you've heard today and want to hear more content like this, then please head over to golfyourselfhealthy.com and subscribe now. Until our next episode, always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.